of it. But I know what I know, I know.
Hello and welcome to Conversations. I'm Brendan Sampson. I know what you're thinking. Where's Noah? He's been on the show for the past year and a half. He's in Atlantic City with QBSN covering the MAC tournaments for women's and men's basketball. So I will be stepping in. I'm the podcast producer. I'll be stepping in today, co-host with Olivia. Olivia, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm really excited to kick off our second episode and get this started.
Yeah, I know. We've had two episodes and already switching hosts two times. Kind of crazy. So today, we're going to have a bit of a fun episode. We're talking about plays that we've seen, musicals we've seen. We're going to talk about Thebes, which is the musical that Quinnipiac put on this past weekend. We're going to interview Danilo Gambini, who's the director for that play. And we're going to talk about our spring break plans and some shows and movies that we might be watching because we might not have that much stuff to do.
Right. Might be a little bored. Time for binge watching season.
Exactly. So if you want to start off, what's your relation to musicals and plays in your life so far?
Yeah, so I was a big musical theater kid growing up. I've done musical theater since sixth grade, and I did it all through high school as well. Some of the shows that I did actually were Dreamgirls, Lion King, Smokey Joe's Cafe. I was also really excited to play Mimi in the musical Rent. And then most recently, during my senior year of high school, I was Aida in the show Aida. And unfortunately, it did get canceled because of the pandemic and everything that was going on back then. But we were able to finally put on the show last summer and do, like, you know, a revamp of the show and have some of our cast members come back. And we did it this past summer. So it was really fun to just be back in the auditorium and be on stage once again. But musical theater has really been a big part of my life since I was young. And I love to sing. I love to dance. I love acting. And I haven't been able to continue that as much here at Quinnipiac because I'm focusing more on, like, my major and being involved in student media and such. But I definitely hope that I can, you know, tie back into my musical theater love once again.
That's really cool. Going back and doing it, even though you didn't do your senior year.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I'm not interviewing you, but, like, get deeper into that. Like, what was that process
so,
like?
So pretty much what happened was, when 2020 hit and then everyone was panicking because of coronavirus, we had to stop the show, and it was really saddening. I was so upset because we were about to open. It was the week before we opened when school got canceled. And then after that, my director had us doing Zooms and trying to, like, run rehearsal on Zoom in anticipation that we would be back in person and doing the show. But as you know, as the pandemic continued going on, nothing was really looking positive in terms of getting back in person and doing stuff like that. So we had to table it, and we did for a year. But last summer, we were able to finally put on the show one more time. And it was cool because now that we're alumni, it became this kind of alumni thing where we all came back. We were working on the vocals. We were working on dance numbers. We were tweaking them in a way that we could still perform safely and put on the show for our families and friends who had bought those tickets and were so excited back in 2020 to see the show. So it was really fun, and I'm glad that we were finally able to put on the performance, especially all the hard work and dedication that we put into it. We were able to just do it. So
no, yeah, that's so special too, because there's so many people who had their spring semester just cut off.
Exactly.
And I know that you obviously didn't get to do it that year, but, like, I'm fortunate. I graduated before COVID. So
lucky you.
Yeah. So I had my entire senior spring and everything. But if I was playing baseball, which I played in the spring, and it got cut off and the season just ended, and that was my high school career, they're not going to have us come back to play a game. Like,
right, yeah.
So it's really, like, cool that you were able to come back and still, you know, do the musical. That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of the teachers and administrators were really excited for us to do it because they were also anticipating to see it. And now that we finally did it, it was worth it. It's really worth it.
Yeah, my experience is a lot different than yours with musicals. I wasn't in any. But my family, my mom and my dad both love going to musicals. So we've gone to a lot of them in my life. And we have tickets to the Hanover Theater, which is in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts, from Westminster. It's just like a I don't know, it's like a community, it's not a community theater, because they bring people in. It's just a theater. Mm-hmm. It's not Broadway, but it's like, it's still a nice theater.
Yeah, local theater.
Yeah. So we've seen a lot of plays there, a lot of different plays have come through, and musicals. So I've seen, like, it's funny, because most of them that I've seen, I was thinking about it, are movies that are also, like, became plays. Mm-hmm. Because I know that a lot of plays become movies.
Right, right.
But we saw, like, Mary Poppins. I think that was a play, a movie before a play.
I believe so. I think you're right.
The Grinch, which I know was a movie before.
Yeah.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka. I've seen Annie, which was a play first, and I loved Annie. I really loved Annie. Yeah, Annie's a good one.
That's a good one.
Trying to think if there's any others. I'm sure there are. But basically, I feel like it's funny because, like, a lot of the ones that you mentioned, those are mostly known as plays.
Yeah.
And the ones that I've seen are mostly known as movies, which is kind of, it's funny to think about. But one of the plays that I know you mentioned, or musicals, was Dreamgirls, which I know you drafted on last episode.
I did.
In the draft, and you mentioned that you were in it. What do you, like, I'm curious to hear, because, like I said, I've seen mostly movies that are plays or musicals. I'm interested to hear what the difference is between, because, books and movies, when they make a movie or a show after a book, it's usually a lot different than the book was. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who say the book's always better,
right,
stuff like that. Is that like the same for musicals? I mean, you were in one.
So I would say, having seen Dreamgirls, like, all the time, and now being able to do the play, there were definitely some changes, because when you do live theater, it's not like a movie where you can take multiple tries and, like, act it out again and again to get it perfect. When you're doing live theater, it's like you get one shot and that's it. So you really want to make sure that you're super focused, you put your all into it, and make sure that you execute it in the way that you want to. So I think that's one of the main differences when you have movies that turn into plays, is that you got to keep in mind that, hey, this is a live show. People are going to just see. You're going to get that one shot to sing that song, and you got to keep it going. And even if you do mess up, you got to just, you know, continue and not let it beat you up so much, because you still have another act to do. But then also another difference from the movie, which I would say, is that I believe all of the songs, for the most part, were in the play. But obviously, like, we'll have different singers, we'll have different dancers.
That was going to be my next question. I was going to say, did you do all of the same songs?
Or? Yeah, so most of the songs were definitely the same, I would say, yeah.
I feel like it's probably character development's just quicker.
Yeah, a little bit quicker, for sure, yeah. Because you're not having all the extra scenes in the middle. It's kind of just the start, the middle, and the end.
Yeah.
And you get to the resolution. That's
and the, and the music is the focal point.
Yeah.
Which I guess it would still be in a movie, but you can kind of add in scenes.
Yeah. And also, when you're doing musical theater versus, like, a straight play, you also have to make sure that not only do you know your lines, but you know your cue lines to know when a song is going to start, and also sing the song and then dance in between. So it's a lot of moving parts. But I think that's what makes musical theater just so much more interesting, because you're always on your toes, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. So you mentioned all the plays you're in.
Mm-hmm.
To bring it back to plays that I mentioned, the ones I've seen, what's the favorite one you've seen?
I think, honestly, I saw Once on This Island, done by two local theaters, and that was, like, my favorite I've seen thus far. Just because the storyline is really interesting, and, like, my mom and I, we both kind of cried watching that show. No spoilers, but there's a part towards the end where it's just like, wow, you look at the character and you're realizing that this young woman is gonna make a big decision, and, like, it kind of just hits home. So I think that was my favorite.
What's Once on This Island about? Because I feel like I've seen that, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, so Once on This Island basically is about this young girl who was found by, like, these two strangers who become her parents. But it's also tied into, like, this idea of gods. And basically, the girl, she grows up and she feels like she has this purpose to end up taking care of somebody who is a man, because he's sick and stuff. But through that, we see how the gods kind of influence her decisions to, like, really make the choice to end up dying for him, for her love for him. So it ties into all of that, and also has a strong cultural aspect as well. And the music is amazing, so.
I saw that play this summer.
Okay, good.
I just looked it up. My girlfriend, her roommate is in, well, she was in theater when she was in high school. Now she does Notable at Quinnipiac, which is the singing
group.
But she was in a play this summer with her community theater or whatever, and it was that. So when you said that, I heard that. I've heard that
before. Yeah, sounds familiar.
So I actually saw that. That was really good. Mm-hmm. I agree. This was just a community one, so I'm sure it wasn't as good as it might have been if it was, you know, like a bigger cast or more professional or whatever, but that was good.
Yeah,
To jump back to my favorite, I know I said I loved Annie, which is completely true. It's my favorite. I remember coming home. I think that musicals, when I leave a movie, if I go to a theater, I'm talking about what the movie was like, maybe scenes that I liked.
Yeah.
When I leave a musical, I'm always singing the songs.
Yes, right? Every time.
And I literally, we were driving home. It's funny, my dad, he puts on the Annie soundtrack when he has to drive home late from like work. Or
to keep him up.
To keep him awake because he knows the lyrics and he can sing along. And we were just playing the Annie soundtrack for the next week.
I think, for the whole week.
Yeah, like that was just like singing Hard Knock Life and Tomorrow.
No, I do the same thing. Like after I finish a show, I'll still play the soundtrack to the point where like my mom even knows the lyrics and she's like, oh, we're playing this one again. So it's definitely an experience because then you feel like connected to the sound, to the songs and just, yeah, the experience, the theater experience.
Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah, it really is. Because you feel like you're in your own little world for those 2 hours that you're watching it, and you get, like, sucked into, like, this other world for a little bit.
I know you mentioned you've been in Rent, too.
Yeah.
I've never seen Rent, but I know that they also have, the movie version, but it's still a musical, but, like, I'm pretty sure that's a popular.
Yeah, it's very popular.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen it. I was just in it when I was in high school, but it was a really good play to do. And also, it talked a lot about, you know, issues surrounding HIV and AIDS when that was really, like, the epidemic started really strong back in the 80s. And it also talked a lot about, you know, your sexuality and what it means to, like, be openly transgender or be openly gay in a world where people still face a lot of discrimination and a lot of, you know, homophobia towards them. So I think it was a great show to just highlight a harder issue, but it was important to talk about it because it's our world today. And we want to make sure that we're honoring and respecting those in the theater community who feel sometimes disrespected, unfortunately, because of their sexuality or who they are as an individual, and just making sure that we honor everybody. So it was a good show.
Gosh, yeah. I know there's a lot of issues in it that are important to bring to light.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like my entire play experience just seems to be a trend. in high school, one of my best friends, he was in A Few Good Men as a play, which is A Few Good Men's a movie with Tom Cruise, which I love that movie. It's one of my dad's favorite movies. It's one of my favorite movies. And I think that was a movie first. I don't know. I'm not going to. Have you seen A Few Good Men?
I haven't seen it, actually.
Well, that's really good. It's about...
I'll have to watch.
It's about military. Somebody dies, and there's a lot. I don't want to spoil anything. But basically, there's a scene in that movie with Jack Nicholson, and it's like the most intense scene ever. He's in a courtroom, and Tom Cruise is like badgering him, trying to get him to admit that he did something. I'm not going to say what. My friend was Jack Nicholson's character.
Okay.
And it's so intense. Like, he says, he just screams, like, you can't handle the truth. And I really, if you would have seen it, it
sounds really interesting. Yeah.
He's like, you can't handle the truth. I actually know the whole thing. I'm not going to recite it right now.
you memorized it line for line.
I literally did. He's like, we live in a world that's guarded by walls.
Okay.
I know the entire thing. I'm not going to go through. But he played that, and the person who was directing the play in high school really wanted to make sure he hadn't seen the movie, or if he had seen it, not to watch it again.
Right.
Because she wanted his own interpretation
and
of the character.
Yeah, and you brought up a really great point, because you want to make sure that you make something your own. Yes, there's a lot of adaptations, there's a lot of different versions, but you want to make sure you tap into your individuality and your, you know, uniqueness when you're playing a character that's been done a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. Because she didn't want just a carbon copy of Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, because that's not fun. You want to be you.
Exactly. Yeah. So I remember that was a big like conversation about have you seen it? Oh, you haven't seen it? Don't watch it.
Yeah.
Like, don't even think about it. Just do it as you would.
We're now joined by Danilo Gambini, who directed Thebes, the recent musical put on by Quinnipiac's Theater Department. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we just wanted to start. Can you give us a brief overview of the play?
Yes. So Thebes is a musical that tells the story of the whole family of Oedipus King, that some people might know. the guy who married his mom and had four kids with her, actually, and killed his dad. So Oedipus kills Laius, marries Jocasta, who was his mother, has four kids with her. Two of the sons fight for power after he discovers that he married his mom and blinds himself and goes into exile. And then they kill each other. And then the other daughter, Antigone, wants to bury one of them. And then she eventually gets killed by her uncle, Creon, who was the king at the time. And then Ismene, the other kid, is the one who survives. But the musical is set on this dungy nightclub called Thebes, where all of this is happening at the same time in a loop forever and ever.
That's interesting. Forever and ever. So I know that the play is like still in development. It's still, you know, being worked on and everything. So what was it like kind of putting on a production that's still in development and working with the writers and how, like, collaborating with them?
Yes, as you can tell, the story is very complicated and has like a lot of relationships, one to the other, to the other, to the other. We didn't mention another character who's Chrysippus, who's also one of the protagonists, and who is a guy who Laius, who is Oedipus' dad, had an affair before marrying Jocasta and getting killed by his son. So it is this, the whole story is actually told in a sequence of Greek tragedies. Of course, like at the time, there were many, 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 many tragedies written, but only a very few reached our times. So this musical is an adaptation of five of them: Oedipus King, Oedipus and Colonus, the Phoenician Women, Seven Against Thebes, and Antigone. There are a few tragedies that we know existed about Laius that would be like in a timeline before all of them, and tragedies about Ismene after that in the timeline, but we don't have those tragedies. So it's a whole adaptation, and it is a musical, and it has choreography, and it has, you know, like so many elements. We also have the Sphinx, which is the one that like posed a question to Oedipus. So as you can tell, it's like a very complicated story to tell. We want to make sure, first of all, that people don't need to know anything before they enter the theater. That's the first of our objectives. Second objective, of course, maybe not second, but one of the objectives too, is that people just have fun, right? It's a musical. It has to be entertaining. It has to be something that just moves you, moves your body, moves, you know, like moves your emotions in a great way. And of course, like, we want a spectacle, and we want to have, actually, this is my thing. I want it to be also funny. I am so passionate about Greek tragedy, and I say like the dudes that wrote those plays, because there were dudes, were the same dudes that created democracy, literally like the same people. So like this like very limited group of people were creating a lot of the structures, societal structures that we are living by right now. And they were also creating Western theater. So it's like, I'm so passionate about this place, because they do carry some sort of core of what our theater is, which is ritual, and it's political, and it's entertainment, and it's all things. And then sometimes when you mention Greek tragedy, the first image that comes is like, oh my God, this is going to be so dull and boring and horrible, and I'm not going to understand anything. And for me, it's like, no. The stories are like wonderful, and they're wacky. And literally, this guy, and I'm going to say the words, this guy his mom and has four kids, and then the kids kill each other, and then he kills his dad, and his dad also had an affair with this other man. It's just like, this is like a whole fucking mess, and it's wonderful and funny and tragic and all things. So I just actually, this is what I want to accomplish, and that gets to, you know, like, we started developing this musical during COVID. I started working with Solon Snyder, one of the composers. I believe it was May 2020. And I just brought the idea to him. I was like, okay, I really want to adapt all these tragedies in one musical. And we started like reading the tragedies one by one. And Solon is like a wonderful composer. He started composing some songs. And then we were like, okay, we need a book writer. And then Solon brought in Emma, who is his fiancée, actually, and Katie, who is her sister. So we started working, the four of us. And they're also composers, so they also started bringing songs. And we started, like, getting, like, songs and more songs and more songs until we got to a draft of the show. And it was, like, very complicated to, like, just read a draft that has, like, 10-plus characters and really grasp, okay, like, does this work? Are we accomplishing all the things that we are set up to do? And at that moment, I was directing an Iliad at Quinnipiac when we were at that moment. So it was about a year ago. And I was talking to Kevin Daly, who is the chair of the theater program, saying, like, I'm developing this piece. And he was like, well, like, you know, maybe you should consider, you know, doing it here. And I was like, great, wonderful, done, let's do it. I spoke a lot, really, like, fast. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. That was great. And so one of the things that you mentioned was that you want your place to be like a spectacle, be entertaining and be funny. So what was it like for you to, you know, now that we're in 2022, still dealing with the pandemic, how were you able to work with the students and really be able to make sure that during rehearsal process, you were able to connect with them to make the show, the spectacle, funny, entertaining show that you hoped for?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we're going to get to, like, some serious things that are happening with us right now, right? So one thing that is very clear to me is that we are all going through a mental health crisis. And this was something that showed up in our rehearsal, right? It's we are feeling overworked. We are also having difficulties with just things that we aren't quite able to figure out. So, like, anxiety is really high, and depression, and also seasonal depression, and, you know, everything is, and the unnatural aspect of us being apart is really, like, taking its toll. There is one other thing that is really, like, I'm getting this understanding, like, with the face masks, you lose the expressions, and you lose a very important aspect of communication. So either you are through Zoom actually being able to see full, like, expressions, or you are in person but actually feeling that you are also somehow distant because you're not able to fully connect. So I think all of this are, like, bridges that we have to cross and walls that we have to just, like, go through, go over. So when I brought this idea, of course, like, we had a casting process, and at the very top of our rehearsal process, I told them, you know, like, we are developing this. This is not ready. This will change, and this will change a lot. And of course, this was cause of anxiety too, right? It's like, you know, like, we would read the play, and I was like, okay, no, I hate the scene. No, I hate the song. Let's cut it. So that the sense of safety was not there. You know, like, because the very material that we're working with was shifting, and that was the purpose of it. So I was a little bit naive going in that we would be able to really tackle this in an easy way. But during the process, I called a few friends of mine, professional actors, saying, hey, I'm struggling with the fact that the actors are getting anxious. And it was like, yeah, it's hard. It's hard for professional actors to deal with, like, new material and things that keep shifting. So you need to figure out a way to have some solid ground under them. The other thing also is that I didn't cast them from the top of process. They didn't know for a good week or 10 days which part they were going to be playing. So this was also a source of anxiety. So we had to, as a group, get over it. Just get over it, get through it, and understand, okay, how do we find the fun? And I think this was a process of our 2-3 first weeks, was like, okay, how do we find the fun in this? An important part of it was that all the choreographies of the musical, we kind of crowdsourced it. So it was me and it was all the actors. We were just, like, coming up with it together. They would just come up with the movement. I was like, okay, this one, yes, and this one. And now what do we do? Like, proposals. Okay, we're going to do that one and that one. And I would be, like, structuring all the ideas that were coming up in the room. So that was fun. That was exhausting, honestly. It's exhausting for people who are not used to just be literally working on their feet for hours and hours. So it was exhausting for all of us, but it was great. And, you know, like you could see the results. And as we went on, I think we all learned each other. So they, of course, learned how I worked and I learned how they work. So things became much faster. So like later on choreographies, we would do it, I don't know, 10 times faster than the very first one that we did.
I know you talked a lot about like how it was constantly changing. Mm-hmm. One of the like more unique parts of the play was the puppets.
Yeah, yes.
Is that something that was kind of come up with because of limited actors and limited cast members, or is that something that's staying? That's because I've heard personally that was one of the funniest parts of the play. So
no, it's not. It is from the get-go. I really love puppets. I think puppets are highly theatrical and they're a wonderful theatrical language and idiom that is, I just love it. I just love them out of the bat. And this was an idea that I gave the writers and composers. It was a good year ago when I said, no, this, the war section, the brothers, we're going to do it in puppets because, and this is my political statement as a director, I just think war is just as silly and stupid as two puppets killing each other. It's as pointless and it should be seen with this distancing of like, what the f*** are we doing? It has always been puppets, and it will continue to be.
Yeah. One of the other things that you mentioned was, you know, working collaboratively with the actors when coming up with choreography. So my question is, how do you think the arts help students connect with each other on a different level? And why is theater arts so important to you?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start with why theater. If we think, for example, that painting is the art of colors, music is the art of sounds, dance is the art of movement, we can say that theater is the art of community, is the art of being together. We need, theater exists in us sharing the space, sharing the air, sharing energy, sharing connection, some say sharing the same heartbeat. There's this the aspect that what makes theater theater is that we need to be here and now together, doing the one thing that makes humans humans, which is the ability to tell stories. Right, the thing that differentiates us humans from other sentient beings is our ability to tell stories. So that's why theater is so fundamental to our existence in groups, in societies. And that's why I say it's theater is political. Political, not in a partisanship way, no. Political in a way that it talks about who I am in relationship to another. And this is, it's always in political in this sense. It's also ritual because there's some secrecy. It started like in the ancient Greeks with the ritual to Dionysus, right? The god of transgression, transfiguration, transformation. So we are together, the actors are transfiguring into one another, and hopefully we audience and we community transfigure our ideas into something, and we promote change, right? We change ourselves, something in our soul, hopefully, right, is essentially shifted after we go through a ritual experience such as theater. And when we say like entertainment, in the root of the word is to hold in between. So we are held in between things, in between time, in between spaces. We are just held there. It's just the feeling that we are being taken care of somehow. And therefore we are able to express or live through emotions in a safer way, because we live through emotions through the characters. We live through emotions or through our things, through the story that is being told. In ancient Greece, we always say like the catharsis, right? The idea of all the tragedy was that people could like just go through the heights of people and I mean audience go through the heights of human emotions in the audience while experiencing tragedy. And this is catharsis. And this is what we mean that like theater should be cathartic. It should be that transformative experience. And of course, when you are doing this and you are looking for ways to really get to that commitment, as I am, this is, you just build strong relationships, because I think the first of all is you just need to be vulnerable. And this is the hardest thing. And this is the hardest thing that I ask my actors without never actually saying that. But I just, there is like a demand that I have of like how vulnerable they can be constantly. And when you're vulnerable in the presence of each other and vulnerable to succeed and vulnerable to fail and vulnerable to embarrass yourself, but also vulnerable to actually reach some sublime minutes of life, this just, the bonds just become super strong. And you do bond for life with people who share that experience with you.
Before the interview, we were actually recording our episode, and Olivia and I were talking about our favorite plays or musicals. Mm-hmm. So my question is, what's your favorite plays or musicals?
Oh, favorite play or, okay, I will say favorite musicals. One of my favorite musicals is Fun Home. I don't know if you know this one. This is by Janine Tesori and Lisa Crumb. It's a story about this woman who comes out as a lesbian to her father and discovers that he has been a closeted gay man for his whole life. And soon afterwards, he commits suicide. So it's a wonderful, wonderful musical. I also love Les Misérables. It's also fantastic. I have many, but I think those are my top two.
To go off of that, is there a favorite soundtrack that you have that might be not your favorite musical, but maybe your favorite soundtrack?
Okay, this is silly. Yes, I've been obsessed with Six. It's a new musical on Broadway. It's The Six Wives of Henry VIII in a sort of like girl band, Spice Girls show vibe. Which is like, it was the first musical I saw after like reopening. And I was like so emotional. I cried, I danced. I was alone, and it was lovely. I would say it was embarrassing, but I was not embarrassed at all. So it was actually like a great experience. There's also one that it just came to my brain. It's a movie called Dancer in the Dark. It's also a musical, but it's an anti-musical. Musical is a whole thing. Is from this Danish director called Lars von Trier. And the main actor and singer is Bjork. And is actually a very, very, very dark musical. It's about the story of this, I don't know if I will remember precisely the thing, but she's an immigrant and she's losing her sight and she needs to get money to pay for the surgery of her son. She actually ends up getting robbed by her neighbor who's a police officer, and kind of like she ends up killing him and she gets death penalty for that and she gets killed by the state. I think I like dark musicals, but you know.
Sounds like it, but hey, we all got our taste. No shame in that. So for my final question, you know, now that the play has passed this past weekend, what was one thing that you hoped that audience members got from watching your show Thieves?
Okay, so this I can say the message that I hope, right, that they would have gotten. The whole thing that I'm trying to talk about in this musical is power. And that power in a royal family, such as the Theban royal family, it goes from one person to the other person and to the other person, and tragedy follows. And nothing ever gets better. There's plague, there's terror, there is drought, there is famine, and then power just keeps going, and then they kill each other, and then someone commits suicide, and then power just keeps going. And it just never ends. And then there's just this hope that the next one will solve all the problems. And it never does. So these plays were written 2,500 years ago. and they are still relevant. So that means there is something essential in our society that has not changed for as much as we like to believe we evolve. There are some aspects that we just keep going around in circles. The very fact that we, in the play, there is a war too, the war between the two brothers for power. And the war is always for power. And in the musical, Chrysippus is someone who's not from the royal family that says, like, why do you get to wear a crown, person from royal family? While I am here taking care of this club and cleaning afterwards and serving everyone, and nothing's ever left for me. And then he gets the chance to sit himself in the throne. And he takes it, even though he knows he's just going to perpetuate the eternal cycle of power and death and tragedy. So what I am trying to actually investigate as an artist, as a citizen, as just a human being living in today, is how do we break the cycle? Maybe we're just looking in the wrong direction. This is my question, and this is the question that I'm trying to pose with the musical and with the last song. How do we actually solve things? What are the structures of power that we put in place that we believe we can change, and instead everything is just the same? So what should we change, and how can we change it? Instead of actually just taking the person who's in power and just putting another person and keeping it forever. No, how do we change the structure? How do we actually change the structure? That's what I am trying to get at.
Thank you so much for coming on. If you missed Thieves, which was March 4th through March 6th, I believe, there's a review on it on qchronicle.com, so you can give that a read.
Oh, it was a great review, by the way. I read it. All the composers read it. We love it. We texted a lot about it. So thank you for that review,
yeah,
too.
Even more incentive to go read it then. But yeah, thank you so much. Really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you to Danilo Gambini for coming on and talking about the musical. Really enjoyed the interview. And we're going to talk about our spring break plans, because we go on spring break next week.
Yes, finally, spring break.
We're recording this on a Tuesday. It's actually going to release on Friday.
Yep.
So spring break literally like in a couple days when this releases.
Yeah, and I'm so excited for spring break. Man, this semester has been a good one, but also a lot of jam-packed work and just staying up late. So I'm excited to sleep in, relax, eat some good home-cooked meals, and hang out with my dog.
that was going to be my question. What are you doing? But now you brought up home-cooked meals. What's your favorite home-cooked meal?
Okay, so my mom is Mexican, and so my favorite home-cooked meals would probably have to be, tostadas, which is like, a tostada is basically like a big tortilla chip, if you will. It's in a shape of a circle, and then you can put like beans on it, you can put chicken on it, you can put ground beef on it, and then like sour cream and hot sauce and all this other stuff. It's like a big fat nacho, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's like one of my favorite meals from her, and also just like the usual rice and beans. And I'm just really happy to eat that all the time because it reminds me of home, and yeah, it's good.
Especially because dining hall food can get old.
Yeah, it can definitely get a lot of really repetitive.
Repetitive. Yeah.
It can get repetitive. Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to use the spring break same as you. Just relax. I know, mm-hmm, that some people, you know, go on these crazy spring break
trips. Right,
trends,
you know, Miami, yeah, and doing all that.
Spring break, woohoo, you know. Right. But, I not to go on a side tangent, but I tore a ligament in my thumb.
Oh, no.
And so, I had surgery.
Yeah.
And so, usually on spring break, I would try to golf. I love golfing. Mm-hmm. But this year, that's not an option.
Gotta stay home. So gotta rest the thumb.
I'm going to watch a lot of movies, a lot of shows.
Yeah, same here. I'm really excited to binge watch a lot of things that I don't normally get to do because I'm so busy doing homework and studying and work study. So
yeah,
I'm excited to watch TV for a little bit.
What's the go-to show right now?
So right now, I've been watching Inventing Anna, and it's a really good show because I can relate to it. The two main characters are Anna and Vivian. Vivian is a journalist. And she's, undertaking this investigative story about this woman named Anna, who is currently under trial for like embezzlement and also just like doing like a whole money scheme. So it's really interesting to see like how the journalism world ties into that world. And it's a great show, and it's actually based on a true story. This is a true case that did happen in New York City, and it's really good. The actors are also really awesome.
I feel like that always makes it better when it's based on a true story, too.
Yeah.
I know it shouldn't matter, but it's like, oh, this is real.
Yeah, when I didn't know it was a true story until, like, three episodes in, and I was like, wait, this is real? Yeah. Like, okay. I really want to know.
There's some crazy true stories out there.
Yeah.
And I know that they, like, make it more dramatic than it is.
For sure.
But even so, some of the stuff really that good. Happens. Yeah. That's on Netflix, right?
Yeah. It's also on Netflix.
So that's very accessible. I don't have a show I'm... Actually, I do have a show I'm binging right now. I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
I'm watching two shows that are like on currently,
mm-hmm.
which is This Is Us. I don't know if you know This Is Us.
It's on NBC. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I used to watch that, but then I got so like caught up doing other stuff.
It's a
good show.
It's
really
a lot.
Good.
There's like, this is the last season. It's the final season. It's the sixth, and there's I think 14 episodes maybe,
right.
But they're all an hour. So it ends up being a lot. You've gone through five seasons of 14 hours basically to get to this point. And it's so cool because they flash in and out of, like, the future, the past. That's, like, the whole show.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it, but I'm watching that every Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and that's coming out. And then on Thursdays, I'm watching Bel-Air, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air show that's now a drama.
Oh, interesting. I actually didn't.
Really?
I'm surprised I didn't. Yeah.
I love Fresh Prince. That's
my
favorite show of all time. I just think Will Smith's so cool.
Yeah, that was definitely a good show.
He's so charismatic.
Day.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I watched it with my dad when I was younger. I feel like I brought up my dad like 14 times. But I watched it with my dad when I was younger. And I just like his style. He always, I'm a big shoe person. And he
mm-hmm.
always used to wear the Jordans before they came out. They were given to Will Smith so that he could debut them on the show.
Nice.
Which is so cool to me. This is, if you've seen Fresh Prince, this
mm-hmm.
is the exact same show technically.
Okay.
But it's a drama.
Okay.
So it's not a sitcom.
Got it.
So, like, all the same characters. Like, I don't know if you have seen all Fresh Prince or how much you remember, but Will is almost gets married to this girl, Lisa, ends up not getting married to her. She's in it, but she's like, in the show, she's, like, previously Carlton's girlfriend. Like, they incorporate the same characters, but in different ways.
Okay,
And
do they use the same actors, or is
no,
it different actors?
No, it's all new actors. Yeah.
Got it.
So the premise is if... Because Will goes to Bel-Air.
Right.
Well, in the show, it's just kind of like, oh, he went to Bel-Air because he got in a scuffle on the basketball court.
Yeah, he went to go live with his aunt and his uncle.
Yeah.
Yep.
They try to make it way more serious in the show.
He
had a gun charge.
Whoa.
Because he was in a scuffle in the basketball court. His friend Trey, who they have in the show for one episode
mm-hmm.
in the sitcom, because he's played by Don Cheadle,
mm-hmm.
who I love Don Cheadle.
Yeah, he's good.
They have him for one episode in the sitcom, but in this, he's like a more serious character. He's getting like beat up by the people, so Will goes and runs and gets a gun and shoots it in the air. Doesn't shoot anybody or anything, just
mm-hmm.
to get them off of him. And
oh, wow, this is dramatic.
But the thing is, I think it's too dramatic.
You think it's too dramatic? That's a little corny?
Like the first episode, I was like, this is, they're doing all of this in the first episode. It's this serious. And then he's in jail.
Oh, wow.
Will goes to jail.
Okay.
And then Uncle Phil gets him out of jail.
Right.
And then he has to go because if he doesn't go...
He'll be in more trouble and danger back at home.
Yeah, well, especially because he pulled a gun on... So there's a whole nother layer to this. I'm not going to just tell the whole show, but...
Right.
The guy that was beating up his friend Trey, he's involved in the gang. He, like, runs the place.
Runs the community, kind of.
Yeah.
That type of vibe.
Yeah, that kind of vibe. Thank you. And so Will gets out, and the guy thinks that he, like, snitched on him because he stays in jail.
Okay.
So then he has this vendetta against Will to try to kill him.
Right, to get back at
him.
So
he's got to go.
So he's
got to
dip.
Yeah. So anyway, the first episode, I just went on this whole thing about this. You talked about Inventa Anna for like 2 minutes. I'm going on this whole. But I really, really like the show now. I thought the first episode was way too much.
Okay.
Way too much, way too fast.
Yeah.
I thought they were really trying to make it too serious. And I still don't. There's parts of it that I'm still, you know, not sure about. But they've really toned it down. And
okay.
And since he's been in Bel-Air. And I really like it. And Hillary, who's his sister,
mm-hmm.
her character in this show has to be... If I didn't love Will so much and he was going to be my favorite character no matter what, she would be my favorite because they've really done a lot with her and I really like what they're doing. She's like a cook.
That's
She's
good.
An influencer.
Does she still have her nice outfits?
Her
always?
Outfits are so cool because they're modern now, so they're sick. Same with Will. I think the style is so awesome.
And where can we watch this at?
This is on Peacock.
Okay.
Which kind of stinks because...
Yeah, I don't have Peacock.
Yeah, not a lot of people have it. I had to get premium just to watch it.
Oh, wow.
So it had to be good because if it wasn't good, that would have been bad.
Would have canceled that subscription really quick.
Yeah, exactly. I just went on for so long about that, though. I guess you got to watch it now.
Yeah, I'm hooked. I'm interested. And I watched Fresh Prince of Bel-Air a little bit. Not as much as I probably should have growing up, but I'd be interested to see. And also, I know some of my friends are also big fans. So I'd be interested to see if they like the new drama version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten mixed reviews. I was actually talking to Don Sawyer about the show. He's he's at Quinnipiac. He's the vice president of equity, inclusion, and leadership development.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, and he was saying how he had the same reaction to me with the first episode.
Okay, yeah. That it was too dramatic in the beginning.
And yeah, and he didn't watch any further. So
interesting, yeah.
But anyway, you said Inventing Anna. Any other shows, considering I just took up 45 minutes, it feels like, talking about Fresh Prince?
Yeah, so another great show that I recommend everyone watch is Insecure by Issa Rae, and it's a really great show. I believe they're on their final season, if I'm not mistaken, season 5. You can watch it on HBO Max, I believe, as well. And it's just a really great show about this group of friends. They're all Black women. And just seeing, like, how they progress in different life stories. And there's a lot of different details and storylines and that get involved, especially around surrounding love and microaggressions at work or, like, college life, financial situations. So it's a really great show, and it's super funny. Issa Rae is a great actress, great director, and she just knows how she wants her show to be put out there, and she executes it wonderfully. So I think it's a great show that everybody can watch, and it's super funny. It's really engaging.
I actually was gonna watch that eventually. I haven't yet.
You definitely should.
But I see it come up on HBO Max all the time, and it looks really good. So
it is, and this is their final season, so I'm kind of sad because I wish there was more. But, you know, on to bigger and better projects.
Yeah, maybe later this semester if I get to watch it, and then I'll poke my head in. And while Noah's co-hosting, I'll come in and say, remember when I co-hosted?
Right, we talked about Insecure.
I watched Insecure, and I want to talk about it now.
Yeah.
But in terms of movies, I guess this is the last thing I'll bring up is The Batman, which is a huge movie that just came out. I actually saw it last week, so I won't be seeing it over spring break. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but I loved it. I know that it's a long movie. It's 3 hours, and it's kind of a force to be in the theater for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I know you haven't seen it yet. We talked about this before, but they do a really good job. The Riddler is the main villain. They do a really good job with him, so I would recommend anybody to go watch that. And I know for a fact that Noah is in Atlantic City, like I said, he's going to watch it again because he liked it so much in Atlantic City with everybody who's there.
Yeah.
So if he was here, he'd be gushing over that movie. So I just felt I had to put that
in
for
him. We had to reference, yeah.
Yeah. That'll do it for Conversations. Thanks again to Danilo Gambini for joining us to talk about Thebes.
And thank you so much to all of our listeners for this episode of Conversations.
And enjoy spring break!